Hi, I'm Renee. Hi, everybody. We were tasked with talking about case studies, but my idea about case studies is that hardware, software, data, algorithms, they only have value when they're deployed. So therefore, case studies is about valuing this stuff. And if you're going to value data science or GI science, then you're going to have to think about deep ethical issues. And I'd actually argue you have to think about moral issues, not just ethical issues. And namely, that is, what is the value? Who gains from that valuation? And what's the nature of the data that serves as input? So this is my grant, GeoThink. It's a pan-Canadian grant of pretty much the major cities in Canada, 26 researchers, of which Mike is one, to look at the way that a variety of technologies, including open data, crowdsourcing, citizen science, and computerized mapping, are changing the conversations between cities and their citizenry. Also, I realized it didn't have any maps, any data science. I said, quickly, I got to insert some. So we actually do a bit of data science and GI science, traditional research as part of the grant. So here's a, this is 11 million tweets of Toronto. It's a collaboration between ESRI Canada and McGill to try to geolocate not just the tweets in space-time, but also try to reach into any links and do topic modeling on the links that are in the tweets, and also try to get geography out of the links, because increasingly few tweets are geocoded. And then to... and no hex bins, it's just centroids, and looking at trying to see how the topics, the geotopics, connect from centroid to centroid. So there's my map, I'm done with it. Okay, so now to the moral stuff. Why are we doing civic data science, and who are we doing it for? So one of the things we've been researching, why are you doing this, cities? And surprisingly for us, because when a lot of cities joined our grant, they said, oh, we're doing it for empowerment. And turns out, no, they're really doing it for efficiency of service delivery. Or, surprisingly, they're doing it for internal business intelligence. So they're really not doing it for some grander democratic ideal to empower the citizenry and to make for a more fair and equitable society. So often unaddressed are issues of civic governance, empowerment, and learnability. And you can only go to Waterfront Toronto to see this take place. Waterfront Toronto is the largest proposed smart city in North America. It is a partnership between the federal government of Canada, the province of Ontario, and Sidewalk Labs. Notably absent is the city of Toronto. And it's also quite interesting. One of the drivers, when you talk to people like Dan Doktoroff, who's the CEO and founder of Sidewalk Labs, is one of the additional drivers of data science in the city is, technology and urban planning haven't been such good partners in the past. And, you know, urban planning and governance is all about politics, and data will solve the politics problem. So it will denude the city of politics. And isn't that wonderful? But those of us who know something about cities know that a city is a political construct. And that's one of the good things about cities. It's not a bug, it's a feature. And data should not be solving it. So we've been working very hard to come up with a whole set of lists of questions that aren't being asked of Sidewalk Labs or the city. Actually, the city is losing out. So they also want some of these questions asked. This is one of eight categories we have of questions that we've been pummeling them with in transparent collaborations that the Sidewalk Labs is having with the citizens, which are neither of those things. So it's been a really interesting process, including things like, in this completely sensed environment that's convenient and customized, what happens when you're a homeless person? You certainly haven't, you wander into the city, you haven't given your consent to be surveilled, and you certainly don't necessarily want a customized environment. You just want, you know, what you need. So moving on from that to, we often talk about VGI when we're talking about data science, and crowdsourcing is kind of like the fuel of a lot of data science these days. And we've sort of developed a lot of quality assessments to handle this unstructured and non-expert data. And I don't think we've gone near far enough. And I point you to Bodie McBoatface, which is, we got a student working on the impact of Reddit trolls on trying to steer civic conversations. Bodie McBoatface was actually, we think of it all kind of like an interesting phenomenon of crowdsourcing. That was actually a Reddit trolling project. Get people to support that. Thanks. So I think we need to go a lot further in what we're doing in terms of quality assessment and ground truthing of data than we have before, because it's with this malicious input of massive amounts of data, we can't always be as certain as we were in the past about its quality and its utility. Then what is this urban government crowdsource or crowdsource data of which we speak? We've been awash in so-called open data, so we figured we've gone from opaque to transparent data in the city. And what we're actually increasingly finding out is it's gone from opaque to transparent to opaque to proprietary. So it wasn't this unitary trajectory that was going only one way. But actually, streaming data is becoming increasingly proprietary, and the treatment, certainly with algorithms like machine learning, are making it increasingly opaque. Another thing that we've been looking at is issues of privatization, privacy, and IP. This is done by my colleagues Amy Conroy and Teresa Scaza at the University of Ottawa, and they've been looking at crowdsourced bus data, that is, people getting on and off buses. And one of the things they're finding out is cities have no idea that what data is being collected. So what happens is the cities go out and they will hire this company, get a contract with this company to put these kiosks in for the tap cards. And they say, oh, that's great. Now we have all this data. And the vendor says, what data? You didn't sign any contract for data. So, you know, we get to use it whatever way we want. And also, Canada has very strong privacy laws, and there are some cities who are kind of circumventing the privacy laws by not including who's going to use the data as part of the contract. So it's a way they can repurpose the data gathered on their the buses or vehicles. It's that's something to think about. Also, in terms of privacy, I know people talked about privacy earlier. I just quickly inserted this. I don't know if people know about this happened, but 8 years ago now, this is a crowdsourcing project to develop a better algorithm from Netflix, and a woman doing that because it outed her. Because very little data can pierce the anonymity of people, even though Netflix figured they had scrubbed enough. And I think it was Stanford researchers who found that all you need is a zip code, birth date, and gender, and you can identify people. And in an era of machine learning, anonymity is gone. So I think we need to think a lot more seriously about privacy and masking, because our current methods are failing, or as a community, we need to accept that we cannot keep people anonymous. We cannot aggregate or mask or display sufficiently to ensure anonymity. And it's a big problem for cities. Lastly, we've been also working a lot on how to engage the public, because my background is in public participation GIS, and it's very tricky, as you were mentioning earlier. The predominant way that people are engaged with the data is via apps. And it brings the question, well, how do we feel about if we're going to engage the public? Do we only engage them via apps? Do we give them the raw data? So there's a tension there because there are a lot of people in the open data community who advocate the only good data is raw data. Now we can argue about whether raw data is ever raw, but but a lot of people want it and contribute via apps. We've done a fair amount of work on infomediaries who were once again brokering or massaging the data. What kinds of information, what kinds of literacy should infomediaries be offering? And indeed, when intermediaries get involved, it's actually quite difficult on some of these projects to identify who the appropriate end users are for this, because a lot of this is passively contributed or passively used via apps, so you can't easily identify who you should be targeting. And lastly, one of the other ways to target is via hackathons. Hackathons are really great, but they tend to get just white boys, and they tend to get people are really comfortable with the code. And what you often find in hackathons is this huge divide between the sandbox people and the problem-solving people. And the data rarely ever meshes, because the data to solve a particular problem often isn't open, because it might be identifying corruption, for example. So, and you know, you build any apps, they're likely not to be that sustainable either. So that's really often more a stunt than anything else. So, like my previous colleague, I will leave you with a call for a moral compass and what sorts of things we might be needing to think about, like knowing your data, knowing the spatial context of your data, knowing your algorithm. One of my concerns is that increasingly, as machine learning becomes more and more available, just as our libraries are becoming more and more available, we're using them. I mean, yes, they're black boxes, but we're contributing to the problem because we're using them as black boxes. So everyone's going to be doing unsupervised classification because it's there, whether it's good or not. And this has been a big critique of data science, that it's a hammer in search of a nail approach, right? You throw data in a bucket and, oh, you know, looks like a correlation. Not really correlation at all, as Mike was suggesting, but it looks like one. So you play with the data as opposed to knowing your data, knowing your algorithm. And often, you know, we want to determine the signal and the noise, but the signal sometimes is what the public actually wants as opposed to what your data finds about them. A pitch for hiring a critical data studies person or a critical GIS person. And lastly, and probably the most difficult, is to acknowledge our own culpability in this. Whereas data and the algorithms increasingly rule our lives, whether it's via Waze pushing us into neighborhood streets or predictive policing arresting us and not giving us bail, we need to think about, was it my algorithm that did that? Was it my data set, training data set that did that? I should own some of that. So that's it.